Oh, welcome back to The Life of Brian.
What have you been up to? I haven't seen you for a few days.
Just working from home, you know, the usual, just hard work.
What do you do for a job again, for people out there that don't know?
You're work in talent management.
NC management.
NC management.
Look after talent.
Yep, like yourself. Like talented people. Very special people.
Special talent like myself.
Well, we're back today and essentially we're going to have Simon Lennox on later on in the show.
And people would say, well, who is Simon Lennox? And you'll find out if you listen later. But Simon Lennox is just a great story. This is a young guy, started in security at nightclubs in Melbourne and has progressed through now to be an owner of a well-known place, which we'll mention a little bit later on. And I just think that is a great story. And I want to find out what you guys are actually up to at places like this. Because you won't tell me, so I'm going to ask the boss.
Some nefarious operations, you think?
Yes.
Yes, well, it's lots of fun. Many of his institutions have been highly regarded in Melbourne over the last 30-odd years.
Do you want to ask me what's happening in the footy?
Is that where you want to start?
Yeah, go on. Yeah, right. Start.
Yep, footy stuff. Anzac Day, your thoughts?
What a day. What a crowd. What a meaningful education process for everyone. I think that game in particular has done more to educate the Australian footballing public, officials and players than any other program in Australia, and that includes politics. So it's been that powerful. That day is that powerful. What an amazing day.
But what, isn't this about football? What about the footy?
The footy was great. The drawn game was excellent. But I did walk away from that day thinking, oh, I'm confused. Everyone in the audience is confused. You can't walk away from a game like that not having a winner. You've got to have a winner. I'm now more convinced than ever, after being of the traditionalist opinion, that we need to have extra time in home and away games.
I agree. And I think that given that rule now exists for the grand final, that is the rule now.
Yep. Why not
Why not get teams to practice this, or at least get to see what's coming? Clickbaiters.
Clickbaiters. My thoughts on clickbaiters. I don't know why you asked that question. Probably because it's written down in front of you. Clickbaiters, scum of the earth. These guys are after one thing only, and that is a headline. They do not care what the story contains or whether it's factual or non-factual. All they're interested in is the headline so that you, the social media user, click on and give them the satisfaction they need.
I'll be red honest. You get sucked in all the time.
I'm sick of going online to one of those news sites and the headline gets me every time.
And then you go into the article and it's nothing to do with it.
And it's nothing to do with the story, or it's not as bad and everything. And it just...
It's disappointing.
It's disappointing. It's gutter journalism.
And as you mentioned, reading what I've written down, this is not what I've written down. These are your questions for me.
No, I'm
struggling to read your handwriting. It just says best team.
Best team in the competition at the moment.
That's what it...
The Cats. You're asking me who the best team is. I'm telling you, it's the Cats. You know why? I love watching them. They just want to kick a score to win.
How do they keep doing it? They've never bottomed out.
They just
really
want
to...
Some teams...
Maybe one
good
year.
Teams do that. Good teams never go to the bottom.
Since I've been alive, 95, I don't know what happened in between 95 and 2000, but it feels like they've always been around.
Yep. And they have, and they just keep topping up, and they're doing it beautifully with some young kids. They're playing beautiful football, precise football, one of the best field-kicking teams in the competition. Love watching them, and I love watching them trying to score. They are just a pleasure to go and watch. There are some teams at the moment, won't name them, you know who they are, that are unwatchable. Unwatchable.
Next question for you, from you, by me.
Yep.
If that makes sense. Best player.
Best player in the competition right now, Jeremy Cameron probably. You know, if I'm picking a team and starting from scratch, I'm wanting Jeremy Cameron.
He's my favourite.
Is he good? He does it with just a great modesty. He's sensational. He's a great athlete. He's a farmer. He's just got all the components that make him extremely likable. And he is a gun player.
The showdown.
Prime time TV. This game will have already been run and done.
Yep.
What a fantastic thing it is that you can get two teams in the same team with so much anger between each other. Great crowd, incredible crowd. The whole thing, just a great game, and commercial TV's experiencing it for the first time.
Beautiful. And moving on to some other stuff outside of football.
Yep.
You were at LIV Golf last week.
The week before now. Incredible event. As good as the Grand Prix, I was slightly more immersed in it because I did a little bit of work there, but probably better than the Grand Prix I've been to.
I saw a number on social media just before. They had 100,000 attendees, which is quite significant.
So it's about 30,000 a day, which is a lot.
Lot for a golf event, yeah. And that's the biggest event LIV's ever had.
For example, I think the Masters only allow 20,000 into the course on a daily thing. So if you get 30,000 into a golf course, that doesn't sound a lot to a footy crowd, but that is a lot of people.
You can only have so many, I guess.
Yeah, that's right.
That's
so
massive.
That's a great event. To go over there and see it firsthand, to change the culture of golf, which is what they're doing, to get people like yourself, young people involved in it, to have music, the whole thing, and prove that golfers can play without everyone having to be quiet. From now on, when I watch a golf tournament and I watch those old guys hold up the sign, "Quiet, please," I just feel like ignoring them because it's a load of bullshit.
There's rumours that they might move the event to February.
Yeah, I don't like it. Too hot. Stifling hot in Adelaide then.
Is it?
Yeah, absolutely stifling hot in Feb. I think it's good time now. And I think a lot of people that were there that I met had travelled there for the footy as well as the LIV Golf. They got a touch of both.
Yeah. That's great. And off the back of that, Adelaide is flying. They seem to be getting all these events and doing a really good job with them.
Well, they are, because they've got a great government in place who cares about getting these things. We used to have a government that wanted these sort of events for Victorians to enjoy and for businesses to make money out of. And for some reason now we have to tell everyone what it's costing, and we have to break confidentiality, and that's why we don't get the events on the quiet. Like Adelaide have gone and stolen a couple, and congratulations to them, because they're doing what Victoria did 20 years ago, and the government here in Victoria doesn't give a toss about great sporting events, great entertainment events.
I don't think that's right. I think we're pretty lucky here in Melbourne.
No, it's 100% right. It's 100% right.
I reckon we're the sporting capital of the world.
We used to be, but we're living on past efforts.
Jeez, you're getting political in your old age.
Oh, no, it's not political. I just said I love them. The government in South Australia. Do you know what the government in South Australia is? It's Labor, mate. It's Malinauskas. He is a ripper. He's the best. I wish we had him as our premier here. He's the best premier in Australia and one of the best ever, because he gets it.
He gets sport, you mean?
He gets sport. He gets events. He gets things that are of value to South Australia.
Yeah. But there are things other than sport, although
he has had concerts over there and they have wine fests.
Anyway, you were in the paper earlier this week, or on the digital media. I don't think it went to print, but did you even read it? You
No. What are we referring to?
I'm talking about an article that was in reference to UNJB calling.
Oh, that. Now, I did hear about that. I didn't read the paper, but people have passed on to me what it said, basically. And look, you know, the fact that I didn't read it.
Do you care about that stuff?
I don't care about it. It's water off a duck's back. That is a minor criticism to what I would normally receive. So I just move on and I go, thank goodness I'm not being accused of barracking for Collingwood. I'm now being accused of barracking for Essendon. So I think that's laughable in itself.
Yeah. You're at a funeral today. You've just walked in the door and we say this with the greatest of condolences. Your first employer other than Richmond when you arrived in Melbourne was Bob Gill.
Yep.
Tell me about Bob.
Former under-17s player at Richmond, former under-19s player, best and fairest, and former reserves player, coached by the great, late Graham Richmond, was my first employer. He was a plumber in Prahran, also the former mayor of Prahran. Prahran's fastest plumber. He was my employer. He took me on. Graham Richmond said to him, "Now, Cocko, got this kid coming from WA, 16. I need you to look after him, give him a job and feed him. And we'll pay," we'll pay half his wages. I didn't know they paid half the wages. But so that was great. He was the best life coach I had. I still saw him up until and spoke to him within a couple of days of him dying last week. So that started in 1979, and I spoke to him at least once a week by text, phone, or in person.
Mm.
He was a great man.
And as you walked in the door, you were reflecting, and we might get a little bit deeper here.
You wouldn't agree with him, by the way, because he's completely old school. And
I don't mind old school.
And what he taught me in the life lesson is discipline and respect.
Oh, you have taught me those.
And
things.
That's what I have brought you up along the same path.
Yeah, but as brought
you up
from the funeral, you were reflecting on how people remember you. And that generally speaking, those who obviously care the most and are going to remember you and continue to talk about you and your legacy is your family.
Yeah, I was sitting there at that funeral today and I was thinking, all these people in this church, they care today and they'll probably care tomorrow, but the memory of a mate fades very, very quickly from friends. But from family, they're always reflecting and always telling stories, almost on a daily basis, weekly basis, milestone basis, whatever it may be. And so I just reminded you that you need to respect me for that reason and start being nice to me.
Start.
And I'm not sure whether I'll have you speak at my funeral or not.
That's okay.
I might go for Jordan because he's a bit more rounded than all of you other guys.
You better write this down.
Anyway, I'll have it all written down, just like my mate did at the funeral the other day.
Jordan will cock it up. Jordan won't even show up.
No, that's the point. He may not show up.
But you love him dearly regardless. It's ridiculous what he gets away with. We're going to have Simon Lennox up next.
Yep,
you were speaking about him earlier.
Yep. So did you want to ask me anything else? Is that it?
No, that's
it. Are we all done? All right, Simon Lennox, our guest coming up. All right, time for our guest now. Simon Lennox has joined us. Simon Lennox, a lot of people would know in town. There'd be just as many people that wouldn't know much about Simon, and that's why I've got him on to find out a little bit more. Simon, good afternoon. Welcome to you.
Good afternoon, Brian.
So Simon Harrison, to introduce him to you, because I know you walk around with your head in the sand most of the time and you've got no
All
idea
the
what's
time,
going.
Simon.
Simon and I met playing football at Paran. We recruited Simon, and also Simon was at Collingwood for a short period when I was there as well. So he's a great footballer and has gone on to be involved in security at, really good pubs, nightclubs sort of in between, to the point now where he has the Osborne as one of the guys propping that up. So he's done really well, and that's what we wanted to talk to you about, how all that happens. How did you start? Like, I was talking to a great mate of mine, Stephen Peary, about you, and he said his memory of you starting in the business sector was behind the bar or security. He wasn't sure which one at the boardwalk.
Yeah, pretty similar back in, late 80s, early 90s. Studying at uni, needed to support myself. Steve Peary was one of the owners of the Boardwalk Nightclub along with Roger O'Carley. Started off there doing some bar, then ventured out onto the door and progressed there into other venues, I guess. So,
because I can remember turning up at the door many times, inebriated, and you wouldn't let me in, and you sent me to the side door, to the dungeon. Go and have a rest in there, I think the instruction was.
Yeah.
Is that happens a lot, I'd imagine.
I mean, it's changed so much, Brian, over the years, where hospitality is now to back in, late 80s, early 90s. But, there was everybody got in back in those days, really, so... Mm. Now there's a lot of different requirements, I suppose.
So this is a great story. Take us right back to the start. So the footy, you're playing, I think you started at Fitzroy in, was it under-19s or reserves?
Yeah, under-19s.
Yeah.
Under-19s, yeah. I was school footy at Marcelin.
So you're a Marcelin boy?
Marcelin boy, yeah.
I don't like that song.
This is an Assumption boy here.
Yeah. We had some good times against Assumption back in 84, 85, but... Yeah, through school footy into Fitzroy under-19s, which Jeff Walsh sort of signed me.
Oh, he was there then. What was he doing there?
So Walsh, he was the recruiting officer for Fitzroy.
Wow.
Back in those days. So had a year at the 19s. And then Robert Hyde was coach.
Yes.
He's calling him a back bumper player.
Yeah.
It set a season out with Fitzroy and then, sort of lost my way a bit with, where it was going. So went back to the amateurs. Had a really good year with the amateurs that year. Was invited to train with Collingwood. Went through the whole pre-season.
What year was that, the pre-season at Collingwood?
90.
1990, premiership
the premiership
year, right.
Yeah, so sort of ended up to draft day, spoke to Lee. If everything went well with the draft, we'd draft you and yeah, Tony Francis, first year of Collingwood, wasn't sure how he'd go. And Dallas Normington was drafted from Melbourne, being a secondary rover.
I remember him.
Yeah, so back to the amateurs.
So the Ammos, and then up to Southport.
Yeah.
So how long did you spend at Southport?
So I did pre-season with Carlton the year after.
Right.
Felt wasn't close, then spoke to Stephen Goff and said, let's just have a break, find me another club outside of Melbourne for a change. Found Southport, Queensland.
Strong club.
Gavin McGuan, Mick's uncle, was coach. Had a good year. We played in the grand final. Michael Voss played with Morningside that year. We played the Gabba. And we got beaten by 10 goals. But
so clearly he was a good player.
Yeah, we speak about often on this podcast, people who are right on the fringe, like given an opportunity, things could have gone differently.
Yeah, what was that like? Do you feel like, did it feel like to you at the time, you're right on that edge of yes and no?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. And I feel, you know, the more mature you become as a footballer, the more you know how to do it better at the time. You know, what I learned when I was 27 and played better footy, if I'd known that at 23, I would have done a little few things a bit different, I think. So
what I learned about those things was it's very subjective. So if there's a guy making a decision on whether you stay at Collingwood or Fitzroy or Southport or wherever it is, the next guy that comes into that job might have a completely different opinion, might say, no, I like Simon Lennox, he's going to play.
Yeah.
And so it's a very subjective thing, isn't it? It's not clearly black or white, either you can play or you can't play. It's a person's opinion.
Yeah, and Gerard Shawley, who was making those decisions with Graham Allen, I still speak to Gerard Shawley now.
Yeah.
Like there's no hard feelings. It just didn't work out. Yeah. So I felt I was, as a footballer back in those days, I was probably too reserved. You know, did the job.
Yeah, you were very modest the way you went about
it. What position did you play?
Anywhere.
Mainly centre half back, but fairly flexible. But yeah, I think I would have been a little bit more creative back if I,
So how did you land a brand?
Well, out of Southport, we arrived there. Steve Perry, myself, and a few others, John Anderson, a few, and we were on a recruiting mission. And we'd heard that there were a lot of really good players playing in the Ammos, of which Simon had previously played in. And so we went on this campaign, and we didn't have a lot of money at Paran. So we couldn't go and get guys that had just finished playing in the VFL at the time, or guys that had missed out on seconds or thirds, because we just couldn't afford to pay those quality players. So we had to go and look guys that were on the edge in other areas, like really good players in the Ammos, but weren't being paid in the Ammos. Well, weren't supposed to be paid in the Ammos. Some of them probably were. So we went and recruited, I reckon, 7, 8, 9, 10 really good amateur players, of which Simon was one, Tommy Kuipert, Tommy Shelton, all of these sort of guys. They were really...
So how did you lure Simon? Do you have a recollection? Like what was
I think just Trevor being coached by one of the great coaches, Brian Taylor.
Trevor Mitchell.
So Barry Mitchell's brother.
Yeah, Trevor was playing the twos,
yep,
I think.
He was.
Yeah, and he had the dim sim shop next to the Boardwalk nightclub.
That's right.
And it was just a connection between Steve Perry and what's not. And, came back into Melbourne. And I felt at the age I was 20, I think I was 24. I still had a fair bit to offer. So probably one last crack.
Yeah.
And having a go. So
and not wanting to blow wind up his backside, but Simon was probably our best player and was probably one of the best in the VFA at that particular time. So reached that standard. Simon was the anchor. He was the glue of what we were trying to do, and we built our team basically around Simon. I think did you win a couple of Best and Fairest?
Yeah, first 2 years.
Yeah, first couple of years. Yeah.
Very fortunate with the votes. Thank
which
you.
Is which is pretty good. So that's the connection. That's the footy connection. So this is a guy. So at the time, you didn't think this would be really important to you, being on the edge of all this footy stuff, but in the end, it's made a difference to what you're now trying to do in business.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think the transition out of footy into the hospitality world was, was pretty tough. Like, you know, you're training with all these teams, and you got to try and work during the day as you used to work as a plumber, and you got to work 9 to 5, then go to training, and then with hospitality, it's not 9 to 5 most of the time. It's 8 p.m. till 3 a.m. And I used to sometimes with the amateurs finish at a pub at 1 a.m. and
Jesus.
Be in bed by 2 and be up at 7 or 8. And
yeah.
Yeah.
So did you think at the time when you were doing bar and security that were you thinking ahead from there and going, geez, I'd like to get hold of one of these places. I reckon I can do it better. Or was it just a job at the time?
Yeah, a little bit of a job at the time, but there was a passion for it. I felt connecting to people, meeting people. Was probably the skill set that sort of elevated me a bit further. So, and then when I was given the opportunity to buy in as a shareholder of one of the venues, which was the Beach Hotel in Albert Park at the time.
So the Beach Hotel, roughly what year were we talking?
So that was 92.
92,
no,
right.
Sorry, 2002, Brian.
Right, 2002, Beach Hotel, yeah.
Beach Hotel, and then from that point onwards then moved into other venues through buying, selling type right. scenario. So,
And what are you looking for in a venue? What is the thing that... are you looking for a young crowd or are you looking for a pub to maintain its old drinkers that have been sitting in the bar for 30 years? What are you looking for?
Yeah, it's all been transitional over 30 years. I mean, back in the day, you know, pokies were the big lure to most of the venues with bistros. And look, the venues I look for because of my network of people I've been able to sort of build up over the journey is, you know, location first and foremost.
Where so in a suburban?
In a suburban, yeah. So for us, it's South Yarramparan. You know, the Osborne Rooftop, which is in Commercial Road, right in that nightclub district, which is not a nightclub. It's a pub with a rooftop.
Right.
And then the Union Hotel, which we just acquired, which is in Chapel Street, which you know pretty well.
Yeah. So, I was just smiling that you said the Osborne wasn't a nightclub. I've been there and it certainly feels like a nightclub.
Yeah, well, it's got that transitional period from sort of day into night.
Yeah, exactly.
Certainly it's not branded as a nightclub, but... yeah, it's got late night activity, there's no doubt. But it's not an Emerson or something like that.
It's a beautiful venue. So, like the renovation that you guys have done from the, I don't know when it was, like 2018 or something around there, like the transformation is incredible. It's a really nice venue massive.
Yeah, it was from what it was, which was a gay nightclub for 20 years.
I remember it because I used to work just down the road. I worked 200 metres from that doing my apprenticeship.
Yeah. And that's the architect, the genius, so he was, which we'd worked with before. To see that vision, and then we work together in regard to how it comes about. But just in regard to who comes, location's pretty important. You know, you've got to...
So location, it's the number one thing, you reckon?
I think at the moment, especially after COVID, with the city turning off, most people have sort of come to those areas. For us, yeah, the Union Hotel, the latest acquisition, was about location.
So geographic location, really important.
Yeah.
So then you have the place. Let's say it's the Osborne that we're talking about here, which you've currently got. What then... is the next most important ingredient to go into that to make sure that you get good patronage?
Yeah, I mean, clearly I'd had a bit of a history of having better venues, Beach Hotel, Beaumaris Hotel, sort of Hotel Barclay in St Kilda. So
What made those work?
Well, I think the Hotel Barclay scenario was late night, Sunday night, where all the footballers would finish AFL games and soccer players and celebrities like David Beckham attended, Justin Bieber, a number of high-profile celebrities. And that sort of built that high-end base. This sort of gave a bit of a springboard into the new venue and other venues and history. I guess once you've had a few popular venues, the history's there to sort of use into the new venue. And that was the catalyst, really.
So quality of guests, you mentioned those. Just by the way, the high-profile ones, like I'm talking international ones. I mean, footy guys, you know, and you can go and say, look, come and have a drink or whatever. But someone like Beckham or you mentioned a couple of others there before, do their handlers ring and say, look, we're planning on coming here tonight. Can you make it a seamless transition for us? Or do they just turn up?
Yeah, normally... Well, David Beckham turned up with Kevin Muscat. So that was out of the blue. And that was, you know, a game changer for that venue. But normally, well, Justin Bieber just walked in one
day.
No,
you didn't even know?
Didn't even know. Selena Gomez and Justin Bieber walked into the venue.
And no way.
Bought a Peroni and sat down on the couch. And people had to take a second look because no one... knew.
But what happened? Was there like a...
pandemonium?
Yeah.
Well, there was no real entourage with him, which is unusual. That's why it wasn't that way. Normally it's an entourage of 30 bodyguards.
Yeah.
They were just after a St Kilda venue to be patrons and clearly wearing hats and not really...
So people didn't switch on immediately?
No, people sort of had to double look and go, couldn't be.
Yeah.
And then by the time everyone had realised... you know, he'd stayed 45 minutes, they're up and out because they weren't about being in a full room. They just wanted to be in a venue
yeah.
and experience yeah. some experience of the Melbourne it. Life.
Which yeah. would be hard for them to experience very hard. At that level. It yeah, would be hard. Horrendously hard.
Yeah.
So, yeah, sorry, I interrupted you. Ingredients into making a place absolutely stand out.
Yeah, I mean, clearly we'd had a network of that 25 to 35 demographic that sort of we had, and it's just marketing to that, really. But, I mean, the key to that venue, the Osborne, is it has a rooftop. And it was able to trade through COVID, being an outdoor area, so it didn't really turn off. But a lot of the venues during COVID turned off, haven't turned back on.
Right.
And it's been a difficult time for a lot of hospitality people.
When you talk about that promotion and you say the 25 to 30-year-old individuals, promoters, like who are you looking for to help promote your venue from a influencer, use the inverted commas, like as in is social media a big thing? Are you, you know, asking people to, you know, we'll give you drink cards or entry and blah, 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 or a shout over the bar. Are you using that style of marketing?
Yeah. I mean, there's every venue who runs late night uses that style of marketing. Yeah. You know, if you want to do late night past 1 a.m, you'll need to have the young people who push the market. We're fortunate enough to have two guys who have been in the industry a while, were involved in Eve Nightclub, sort of stayed relevant to the market. They've sort of got a good database from years gone by that can tap into, you know, the corporate events, bring the people after certain events.
So it sounds like the people that run slash own slash invest in these have their network that follow them wherever they go.
Correct, yeah. It's a little bit like a hairdresser, to be honest.
Yeah.
You know, it's hard to buy a hairdressing salon because what are you buying?
Yeah.
You know, they can go and start up somewhere else and...
See, if I'm an investor or I want to partner up with you and say, come on, let's go and get the next nightclub, you know the thing that will worry me the most is I've been in Melbourne since 1979 and what I've seen these places come and go. And they come and go and a good one might get 6, 7, 8 years. Yeah. You know, a reasonably good one might get 3 or 4. Does that worry you that... As quickly as they switched on, as quickly as you've been able to get a night venue to switch on, they can switch off.
Yeah, I guess it'll depend on your model. And our model is, so our nightlife model is probably 30% of our revenue and the rest of the model is functions, events.
Right.
And what percentage are they?
Well, they're made up of the other 70%. Yeah, between right. your food, your beverage, yeah. your functions. You know, we have a relationship with Kieran Maher Racing through the Spring Carnival. Which is a strong relationship. The Melbourne Cup's been back there in previous years.
Right.
So we build these collaborative relationships all year round where we can tap into. So for us, going back to your question, Brian, I feel, you know, being an investor, not knowing a lot about the industry, first and foremost, you invest into people. And that's my thing. The advice I give to anyone with investing into any hospitality venue, you're not actually... investing into the brand, you're investing into the person running the brand.
Right.
Because that's the difference right there.
Yeah.
You know, it's probably the key to it.
Yeah, right.
I wonder how many places like yours would be, you'd probably know, Harrison, you'd go to all these places. Are there like a half a dozen at this level that that Simon's Place is at the moment, the Osborne?
Yeah.
Is there half a dozen or less or more?
Less, I reckon. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. We talk about it all the time, the competitive market that we're in. And I feel, well, once again, after COVID, it has been difficult for a lot of the other ones to turn back on. We were fortunate with the rooftop that we just kept trading outdoor. So,
Are you looking at what your competitors are doing? Like
absolutely.
The other big one is like the Emerson. How do you see improving or in terms of the beyond the 1 o'clock stuff
yes.
is what I'm referencing. There's probably different parts of the business that
so
aren't
they run a little bit of a different model to us, and I won't go into them too much, but they're a younger model.
Yeah.
And we just don't play in that space. You know, we play in that older space. And not old, but, you know, the sort of 25 and up.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit different.
Simon, I need to ask you this. This is extremely personal. Have you seen any of my kids wanting to get into your place?
Well, I've had a couple of phone calls.
late night phone calls.
Who does he think he is? And this isn't for me,
Jesse,
by the way.
Jesse putting pressure on me to say, can you ring your mate? Ring your mate,
Jesse's
Dad.
Jesse's standing out the front of the Osborne
thinking
probably yeah,
shit hot.
Midnight.
And
saying,
Simon's
Dad,
in bed.
Can you get me in?
Yeah, a couple of times I've been in bed, but I always welcome the phone calls. It happens. It still happens.
That's embarrassing.
No, I think it's good. Like, if you think of my venue, I'm always going to take the call.
That's right. How many people come through the Osborne on a Saturday? What is this your busiest day?
Yeah, by far.
So
yeah.
Day as well as night?
Yeah, mostly from 3 o'clock. The venue opens at midday, but from 3 o'clock it'll start. yeah, there's no less than 1,500 people on a Saturday.
Wow.
Yeah, it's popular, you know.
How many staff for 1,500?
40.
Jesus.
That's a lot.
Yeah, it's a lot of staff. And I'm talking about security,
chefs,
your bussy team, bartenders.
What's the requirement with security? Is it per 100 people or something?
Yeah, two for the first 100, then one every 100 after that.
Right. So that's a fair cost.
So we'd have 10 guards on a Saturday night. Wow.
Jesus.
Yeah, that alone.
And how important is that, making sure that trouble doesn't happen at your place?
It's everything. The door's everything. In anything.
Is it really?
Absolutely, yeah.
Really?
Your front door's your key component of your venue. Without your front door, the rest is just...
They hold an extreme amount of power. Yeah. So you've got to have a good relationship with them to make sure that they're bringing in or not bringing in the right people.
Absolutely, yeah. It's the key to success.
Most sold drink at the Osborne?
Vodka, lime and soda.
Vodka, lime and soda. Drink. How many bottles of vodka would you go through on a Saturday?
We go through 40 cases a week.
Jesus Christ.
What brand do you use, or is it... Doesn't matter.
No, we use Vodka O.
Yeah.
Which is a standard vodka in the marketplace. So, yeah, vodka's just huge.
Now, our nightclub lines, I laugh and I giggle and I drive past and I see a line out the front of this place. It happens here in Fitzroy and Brunswick Street. And then I look in the pub through the window and there's hardly anyone in there. Yet there's a line. What is it about you guys and wanting to have lines?
Oh, well, perception's everything, isn't it?
Is it a facade?
No, like, not for us, not at all. No, because we've got a high patron license. So for us, we can have, you know, 500 plus patrons. So for us, it's not. It's just about the process getting the
menu. So it is a process.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a screening process. It's an ID process. You know, it's also speaking to people. You know, how's your night? Where have you been? You know, building that relationship, rapport.
Going into a line at the Osborne, and I've done it a few times, it's like you feel like you're well, I don't like to do that at midnight, unlike other people. You feel like you're about to be interrogated, like I am majorly pissed or I've done something wrong or I'm going to get knocked back. Like, that's not a great feeling, but I understand now when you say that letting those people in or not is key to the business and the success of the business.
Yeah.
So there's got to be that process for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And part of it's engaging with a patron. You know, building up that rapport that you do feel comfortable, you know, you're welcomed, you're embraced.
So. You've been on the door long enough. When someone walks up and you don't know them and they're from Western Australia and you've got no idea who they are, how do you quickly sum them up and make the correct decision?
Oh, a lot of it's got to do with, you know, like you know, we're a bit of age group.
So the way they dress, number one?
Yeah, a little bit, yeah, but... I mean, we're a pub first and foremost, so we're not a nightclub. I know you keep going back a little bit to the nightclub. Yeah. But late at night, there is an expectation that girls dress to impress. Boys don't dress to impress. It's just a fact of life. So, I mean, I probably did when I was 18 also. So that critiquing of that, you know, where you're from, and it's just a chat. It's a general chat. And I find that most people who work in retail are really good in hospitality because they have to make an effort to sell.
Yeah.
I feel like door people are like a retail sort of component. They've got that extension of retail. Retail people work a lot in hospitality doors.
When we talk about security and we're lining up, and I'll go back to this, the nightclub scenario again, when people are actually scanning IDs, what is happening there in terms of entering a database? Like, are they taking photos of those IDs in the people's face for if something happens that night and they can go back through security camera footage and identify someone, or is it another thing?
Yeah, so Scan Tech, we don't use that platform, but that platform links into all the nightclubs, and if you're barred from one club...
Around Fitzroy here, they use it, for instance.
Yeah, and most venues...
So if I get barred at the Osborne, the provincial are going to know about it?
No, only if that district's using Scan Tech. Yeah. Right. Yeah. So once again, we don't use Scan Tech because we're not a high-risk venue.
Yeah.
Venues that get put on high risk are normally... But a lot of operators also like to get in front of the curve and go, well, let's just stop that before it starts.
Okay.
Yeah.
And know who the troublemaker is before they come in. So it's all red flag you if you come up and you've been barred from another venue.
Yeah. Now, here's the question. Simon, get ready for this one. How important is the girl to guy ratio?
Oh.
Now this must be something that you think about, because when I am queuing up at these places, and I don't know why I do... When I used to queue up at these places, I would look and say, why are those six girls allowed in and us six guys aren't?
Yeah.
Is that a fact?
Absolutely.
You need the ratio to be right?
Of course. I mean, once again, being a pub, the blokes are going to come because the footy's on, there's food, and there's girls to look at. So, yeah, absolutely it's important, you know. And it'll always happen, I guess, that the rope will always go up when the girl walks through.
What is the number? Is there an ideal?
No, there's no number. So
this is what I'm wondering, because if I'm a young budding footballer, you know, I'm Charlie Curnow and no one knows who I am yet because I've just played my first 10 games, right? Yeah. But I've done all right in the 10 and, you know, people are starting, you know, people at Carlton know who I am, but no one really else. And I'm strolling around Melbourne and I roll up to one of your venues and do I, as Charlie Curnow, who's played 10 games, should I line up or should I come to the front and try and convince them that I'm somebody? What would you advise me to do if that was me?
Oh, well, I mean, clearly you've been in that position when you were young, coming to Melbourne as a young Tiger, but... Look, I think most of the people know who the players are these days, and most of the players will make a name. We want them to make themselves known because we want to know who they are.
Oh, okay.
You know, because of the sheer fact to make them feel like that they can come, they will be embraced, we want them to come, we feel the environment's safe for them, being an older crowd. And if we know who they are, it's easier to keep an eye on things.
Because the knowledge, you'd have to be pretty good of the security, wouldn't it?
Yeah, for sure.
Most guards follow footy.
Yeah. We've spoken a lot about the success of particularly the Osborne. When, with your business ventures, and you've been through so many great venues across Melbourne, when have they gone wrong? Has there been, you know, some learning experiences with pubs or clubs that haven't gone quite right?
Sort of the ones I try and stay away from is restaurants. So, you know, ones that are really heavily food driven, I tend to sort of, that's not really my model. Food's not right. My particular model. I'm more pub style. Yeah. You know, the food is a key component, but it's not the huge driver of revenue. Sort of being involved in a few smaller venues with food, just the numbers just don't work.
So somewhere like the Railway in Port Melbourne, food dominated, isn't it? Yeah. It's all about the food.
All the steaks, absolutely, yeah. And, you know, that's probably not my skill set to drive the food harder because my network is a social network.
Yeah.
You know, fortunate enough to have someone like Dane Swan involved.
Yeah, so he's involved in a few of the
pubs. Dane's involved in a few venues, which, you know, that's that social networking crowd.
Yeah,
And they're really driven to that.
And what does he do? Yes, he's an investor, but does he go above and beyond and do other things for the venues, or like what is his role?
Is it all about promotion?
Not really. Like that's probably the key is to the investment for him. It's not reliant on him. So we're not ringing him every 3 days going, we need you to do a sporty.
Yep.
Yeah.
He's done one sporty in 3 years for us and that's it. So there's not a huge reliance on him. Whereas another venue we're looking at doing with some athletes will probably be a little bit more.
Yeah. Who else do you like to get involved with? Is there any others that are,
that we would know,
present around the venues that you've got or had?
You're about to do one in Brisbane, for instance.
Yeah, so that's a good fit, I guess, talking about that. So we've just secured a site in Caxton Street, Brisbane. If you know Caxton Street, it's well known for the State of Origin buses that used to go down the street and the cans used to get thrown from the Caxton Hotel at the New South Wales players, so they've stopped that. But we've secured a site, you know, 100 metres away from Suncorp Stadium, and Cameron Munster, who Melbourne Storm, you know, if not captain,
superstar,
he'll be involved as a Melbourne sort of person living down here, but his wife's from Queensland.
There?
Yeah, his wife's from Queensland. He's from Queensland. Life after footy, and a lot of athletes, you know, start thinking about that. You know, Cameron's sort of into his last year of his contract, so I guess he's looking for where, you know, he can sort of venture into next. So
back to the Osborne. So somewhere like the Osborne, how long? Every place has a life.
Yeah.
Right. So how long have you been there, by the way?
So we signed the lease in 2016. We renovated. We opened in August 2018. So it's only been 6 years in August. 6 years.
So how? I guess you sense it and you can feel it. But how long before you move on to the next one in Melbourne? We know that you're going to this one in Brisbane as well, slightly different. But the next, what do you wait for it to drizzle or do you sell at the peak? How does it work?
If you're asking my wife, there won't be another one.
Right.
So. Look, I feel the Osborne's still got enormous growth. The inner city development that's going on around Perran and Windsor is extraordinary. And the reason being, they're all built near train stations and fortunately we're on the Perran train station. So I feel the growth in this venue is long-term. You know, we have a 40-year lease. This is a long-term.
40-year lease.
It's a long-term venture.
Because you want something to sell, Harrison. Yeah. So you might operate it for 10 years and then sell 30 years of it. You know?
Yeah. Right. And the investment for us, we took over a rundown old gay nightclub and put a fair bit of capital investment in, hence why the long lease. You wouldn't normally get a 40-year lease.
I know the area you're operating in the Prahran South Yarra area is different from where we're doing this today, Fitzroy. Like, you know, you've got the Napier Hotel, you've got the Rainbow Hotel, you've got the Standard Hotel, you've got the...
These are all old-school pubs.
They're all old-school pubs. Yeah. And they're absolutely hell-bent on keeping them as old, barred, you know, meal-first sort of thing and a drink rather than what you've done.
Yeah. And there's a fit for everything for the demographic. You just have to understand what your demographic is. And, you know, due to the fact that COVID turned the city off, everyone flocked to Prahran and Windsor. It's the new hotspot and it hasn't changed. And I don't think it's going to change for a while. You know, you drive into Windsor and the restaurants and bars.
Windsor's phenomenal, amazing. That's at the Dandenong end of Chapel.
I used to play football in Prahran, so I know where it is.
Yeah.
Well,
how come you didn't know the history of Simon then if you played at Prahran, one of our great players? Two-time best and fairest.
Well, there's three best and fairest in this room. Who do you think the other one was? It wasn't you.
And we sponsor the Prahran Football Club.
Have for a long time, even when I was there.
Which, you know, I was fortunate enough to have a great relationship with Tim Hable, who's been a...
Yeah, excellent man.
Excellent man. And it's probably one of the proudest moments I've had, to be honest, in regard to one of the business sides, what you can do in business, was to give something back to your footy club that gave me an opportunity, which has been really pleasing, to be honest.
Well, it's been amazing. Have you got any other smart-ass questions or what have you got?
Nothing. I've got nothing.
Because it is really interesting. I've always wondered about all this sort of stuff and just watching the kids go out now and, you know, having Jesse ring me up at like a midnight and say, come on, can you get me into this as if I know someone.
I'll always take your call, Brian,
It is fascinating to work out what makes it click, isn't it?
Well, yeah, there's lots of different venues for all styles of people and as you say, it just comes back to demographic.
So, Harrison, you're 28. What would you describe your style of venue as? What are you looking for? Because I know Jesse's looking for what Simon's supplying.
I've probably matured from that scene. I was never massive into that scene. I'm probably looking for the things like that, like a quiet beer with some mates at either a pub like the Napier or the Standard or just going out for a meal at a Chinese restaurant and BYO, like that type of thing.
Wonders why he hasn't got a girlfriend.
You need to come to Osborne if you want a girlfriend.
Yeah.
All right, Simon Lennox, our special guest. Appreciate your time, Simon.
Thanks, boys.
You can expect my call at midnight this Saturday.
See you next week.